Once there was a Yid, a big tzaddik, a big Talmud Chochem, and his name was Reb David. He was a chassid of the Baal Shem Taif. And with Reb David, he would go out into the forest. Sometimes he would say Tehillim out there. Sometimes he would learn out there, or sing a nigun out there, or chazo over something Baal Peh that he learned, or think about Hashem. And he saw a very strange thing in the forest. In the place he used to go, there was an old house that had fallen down, a churban. Somebody had lived there many, many years ago, and just part of the house was still there. It was all fallen down. And Reb David knew that he's not going to go in that place. First of all, the Torah says you shouldn't go into a churban. There's shindals over there. And it's pashut not safe. But when he would go past it, when he would go by it, he saw very strange things. Sunday, he noticed these shindals were very skinny. They were like sad, they were crying. But Monday, when he went by, he noticed the same shindalids, and they were even skinnier. And they were crying even more. And the next day that he went by, he noticed they were even skinnier and crying even more. And each day that he would go by, he would notice they got skinnier and skinnier. Until Erev Shabbos, they'd be like a spaghetti, like a hare. You could hardly see them. And they were crying, sad and skinny and frowning and crying. But Kinnalach, on Shabbos, when Reb David would go on Shabbos into the forest, it was completely different. It was unbelievable. He didn't hear crying. From far away, he heard laughing like a party. What's over there in that churban? A party? The shindalas are making a party? And he went over there, not too close, but he could see over there. The shindalas were fat, gigantic, with red faces. And fat like roly-poly, round, big, fat shindalids. Like each one weighed a ton. And they were laughing and singing and dancing and jumping up and down. Like a big party over there. And he noticed the same ones that were skinny were now fat. The same nose that was very skinny was now a fat nose. The skinny spaghetti shindalid was now a very gigantic balloon shindalid, like a watermelon, big. And this happened week after week. And of course, Reb David wondered what's going on over there. But, you know, it's not really his business, he thinks. And he better just stay away. But he did notice this very strange thing going on, that day by day, during the week, they got skinnier and skinnier, and they were crying more and more. And on Shabbos, they were fat, and they were gigantic, and they were full of life and chayas, and they were laughing and singing and dancing and jumping up and down and excited, like a big party over there each time. And this is what Reb David noticed in the forest. And this went on week after week, the same kind of thing. And of course, Reb David wondered what was going on over here. But who knows what Hashem does and the things from Hashem, certain things. He kept away Bichlal, but he just wondered about this. Until a certain thing happened. It was the third meal by the Baal Shem Tov. Suda Shlishis, Shalashidis. The Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov used to eat many times the Suda, the meal of Shabbos with the Baal Shem Tov. Sometimes Friday night, and sometimes Shabbos day,
And many times for the third meal, the Suda Shlishi Shalashidis, they call it sometimes. And all the Talmidim would sit around with the Baal Shem Tov, and the Baal Shem Tov would say words of Taira and Chassidus, and they would sing beautiful Nigunim, and people would come just to watch, just to be in the room, to be able to see such a halakha thing going on. And once in a while, the Baal Shem Tov would speak to a certain person about something, or a certain Talmid. There are many stories about the Baal Shem Tov during these Sudais. And all of a sudden, the Baal Shem Tov says to his Talmidim, he wants to tell them a story about a certain person. And the Baal Shem Tov starts. There's a certain very halakha yid, a Talmud Chochem, a tzaddik. Of course, we know from the Tanya there's two kinds of tzaddikim. It's actually from the Gemara. There's what the people call a tzaddik, you know, a person that has a lot of mitzvahs. But then, of course, there's a really, really true tzaddik who doesn't have any yetzahara. He only has two yetzer toivs. He's completely halik, like the great tzaddikim that we know. The Baal Shem Tov was talking about a tzaddik, the other kind of tzaddik, you know, a special yid. But as we're going to see, this yid also had a yetzahara. Maybe he himself thought he was a tzaddik. Because a real tzaddik does not have a yetzahara. Some tzaddikim, it says like David HaMelech, he killed his yetzahara by fasting. He killed the yetzahara. And there's some tzaddikim kenalach that they change the yetzahara. Instead of being a yetzahara, it becomes a yetzer toif. They have two yetzer toifs. But for sure, a real tzaddik doesn't have any yetzahara at all. So sometimes we say a person is a tzaddik, he has a lot of mitzvahs, he learns a lot of Torah, but if he still has a yetzahara, even a little bit, he's not a tzaddik at all. He could be what's called a beinoni. A beinoni is just like a tzaddik, thinking like a tzaddik, his thoughts are always very, very halik. Speaking, he never speaks any chas shalom lashon hara or lies. He doesn't say anything wrong. Doing, he always does mitzvahs. He's always learning what he should be learning. This is called a beinoni. But if he has a little bit of a yetzahara inside, it still could be only a beinoni. He doesn't listen to the yetzahara. He doesn't think about the yetzahara things that the yetzahara wants him to think about. He does not speak what the Yetzirah wants him to speak about, and he does not do what the Yetzirah wants him to do. But he still has a Yetzirah. This is called a Beinoni. This is also a very high level to reach. Everybody should try to be a Beinoni. But a Tzaddik is something only from Hashem, a real Tzaddik, who's Halik, and that doesn't even have a Yetzirah. So the Baal Shem Tov starts this Maisa, he says there's a certain Yid. And this yid, one of the things he does to serve Hashem, he fasts from Erev Shabbos until Erev Shabbos. That means he did not eat on Sunday anything or drink. He did not eat on Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. He did not eat the whole week. He fasted. Can you imagine fasting for so long? And only on Shabbos he would eat and drink, because L'Kavod Shabbos, this is a mitzvah for Hashem, and it's very halik. The eating on Shabbos is different than the rest of the week. There's all kinds of things in the Torah about eating on Shabbos. And he would eat only on Shabbos, and the rest of the week he would fast to make himself halik. But Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to go into Shabbos if you're very, very hungry, because then you're not going to be able to daven with kavana on Shabbos. You'll be thinking about food, you won't have koyach. And also, by the way, in those days, people that fasted, they were not the people that would think about food the whole time, and they're fasting, thinking about food. They would be learning Torah and doing mitzvahs, and they would still be strong when they fasted. Only they fasted because it was a very halakha thing to do. But by Erev Shabbos, you can imagine he would be very, very hungry, and he would not be able to keep this halacha because he would go into Shabbos being too hungry and not be able to daven with kavana. So this person who fasted from Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos, he did have a little something to drink on Erev Shabbos, right before Shabbos, in order he should not go into Shabbos completely hungry. And then he'd be able to daven with kavana. So what would he do? He would have a glass of milk before Shabbos. One glass of milk before Shabbos. And that would give him koyach to go into Shabbos. This is what happened. The first week that he was doing this fasting, he went to pour the glass of milk. He poured out a glass of milk, and as he reached to drink it, it slipped out of his hand. It dropped on the floor, it broke, and the milk spilled all over the floor. And he got very upset. Oh, my milk! Look what I did! I dropped my milk, I made a big mess. And he asked his wife, where's more milk? Oh, I don't think we have any more milk. Boy, he got very upset. That was the last milk. Well, what can he do? Next week, he decided he's going to be more careful, and he is going to be very careful when he picks up the glass of milk. And so he poured out the glass of milk, and he decided he's going to be more careful when he picks it up. And all of a sudden, as he reached to get the glass of milk, a cat came from outside because the door was open. The cat jumped on the table. You know, cats love milk. It went right over to the milk, right before he can get the milk, and it started to drink up the milk. Hi, a cat! It's drinking my milk! Hi, what's going on? And he wasn't able to have that milk, and he asked his wife, where's more milk? I'm sorry, that was all. That was the last milk we have. And again, he got very upset. Well, this time he decided he's not going to take any chances that it should spill, that he should drop it, or that a cat should get to it. So he decided he's going to drink the milk in a closet, be very careful. It will be in a closet that nobody can get into. He'll hold it with both hands, and that way he'll have his milk. So the next week, what did he do? He poured out the milk, he put it into a glass, and he put it into the closet next to the kitchen. And he said, this time I'm going to have my milk, and no cat is going to get it, and I'm not going to drop it. And right before it was time to drink his milk, he had to go out of the room for a minute to do something. And his wife came into the kitchen to get ready for Shabbos, to do certain things. And all of a sudden, a beggar came to the door, a poor man asking for food. He knocked on the door. And his wife looked at him. She felt very sorry for him. She wanted to give him something to eat. On the stove, the things that were cooking were not ready yet. So she went over to the closet to see maybe there was some food in the closet. And she noticed there a glass of milk. Look, we have a glass of milk in the closet. I'll give it to the poor man. He gave the poor man the glass of milk. Oh, he was so thankful. He made a bracha and he drank it. And then she put the glass where she put the empty glasses. And a minute later, her husband came into the room. He went into the closet. And all of a sudden he screams, "Where's my milk? Where's my milk? I put it in the closet. Where is it?" And his wife says, "Oh, I didn't know you put milk in the closet. I was wondering why milk is in the closet. I gave it to a poor person to drink. I didn't know you were going to drink it." And he got so angry, he got so upset. And there was no more milk to drink, and he got upset even more. And this went on week after week. For some reason, every Erev Shabbos, something happened with his milk. The Baal Shem Tov is saying this maisa. And all of the Talmidim were listening. And then the Baal Shem Tov continues, and he says, when a Yid does a mitzvah, he gives koyach to the Yetzer Tov. And when you do a mitzvah, you make a malach. With every mitzvah, you make a malach. And this malach goes to Hashem, and it helps you. And the malachim that you make through your mitzvahs do all kinds of things to help you in your life. And Chas v'Shalom, when you do an Aveda, there are malachim that are created through the Avedis, and your koyach goes to feed the malachim. You're either feeding the malachim of Kedusha, of Helikait, of good through your mitzvahs, or Chas v'Shalom, you are feeding the malachim of the Yetzer Hara through Avedis. And everybody has these malachim. And these malachim do things in the world, either to help you or chas v'shalom, even to be against you if it's the other kind of malachim. Of course, there's ways to get rid of these malachim through tshuva, especially in Kriya Shema Lamita, when a person is saying Kriya Shema Lamita and doing tshuva for anything wrong they did during the day, it gets rid of the bad malachim. There's a way to get rid of their neshama and get a way to get rid of their goof and any kind of tshuva that a person does. Now, this certain yid that we're talking about in the story, the Baal Shem Tov said, you can imagine he was very halik, but he was feeding his Yetzer Hara Malachim only once a week. The whole week, when he was fasting and doing mitzvahs, his Yetzer Hara Malachim couldn't have any food. They did not get any of his koyach. And they happened to live in a house in the forest, a churban, a destroyed house. His Yetzer Hara Malachim were living in this house. And the whole week they were very skinny and they were crying. Why? Because they were not getting any koyach, any power from this yid. Because he was fasting, and he was learning Torah, and he was doing mitzvahs. So he did not give his malachim any koyach. This yid, his Yetzer Hara malachim, because he was fasting the whole week, they got skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. Why all of a sudden on Shabbos they changed and they got so fat and so freilich? Because once a week on Erev Shabbos, they got a tremendous big koyach from this yid. What was that big koyach they got from the yid? Because he got angry. He got mad. Why did he get mad? Because the Baal Shem Tov is saying that before Shabbos, he would have a glass of milk. He would try to have a glass of milk to go into Shabbos not so hungry. And each time something happened to that glass of milk, he wasn't able to drink it and he got angry, he got upset. And when a yid gets upset and angry, this gives a koyach to the Yetzer Hara. And of course, Kinalach, as the Baal Shem Tov is telling that story, there was one of those Talmidim that was listening, and he knew that the Baal Shem Tov was talking about him. Who was it? Reb David. And he learned that there's such a thing that you could be fasting from the Shabbos to Shabbos, and you could be so halik, but from one thing that you do, especially if it's getting angry, this can give such a big koyach to the Yetzer Hara. And so, of course, his tshuva was, when something happens that is upsetting to you, you try not to get angry, and you try to still be besimcha, and you still try to think about Hashem, and not get angry, because when a person gets angry, it gives a big koyach to the Yetzer Hara. And we don't want to feed the Yetzer Hara, chas v'shalem. We only want to feed our Yetzer Tov. And that's the Maaseh.
Once, Kinelach, there was a king, and the king had such a minig that once a year he would announce a city or a town in his kingdom that he would visit. He would announce it 30 days before the visit. It was a special day that he would announce it. And it came the day that the king made his announcement, and the people were there to hear that he can get into the palace, and the officers and the guards, and the king's sitting on his throne, and he says, of course there's trumpets first, do-do-do-do, when the king is going to say a special thing, the trumpets are sounding, bee-bee-bee-bee. And the name of the town that I will visit this year in my visit to the kingdom is going to be Grape Town. And the soldiers and the officers of the king ran to their horses, and they rode very, very fast to Grape Town to announce to the people of Grape Town what the king said. All of a sudden, there comes to Grape Town a whole group of the king's soldiers and the king's officers. Hey, look! Look! What are the king's officers and soldiers doing here? And they sound the trumpets, pee, 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 pee. Everyone should know in Grape Town that in 30 days the king is coming for his royal visit once a year of a place in his kingdom, and this year he picked Grape Town. So get ready, Grape Town. Oh, the people were so excited. Kitties were jumping up and down. The king is coming! The king is coming! And mommies and tatties and boys and girls, everybody was so excited. And the mayor of the town, you know what the mayor means? Like the head of the town, the leader of the town. He clapped on the tish in shul, and he says, tonight there's a very big meeting of everybody in Grape Town to decide what we're going to do to get ready for the king coming. We have to get ready. We have to do something special. We have to give cover to the king. We have to make this place look special and nice. We have to do something special over here. The king is coming. We can't just have it like it is every time. We have to figure out what we want to do. And that night in the shul, after Maariv, came the men in the men's part, and the ladies in the Ezra's Nashim, and kids that got the parents' permission to come came, that couldn't get a babysitter or whatever, and a lot of people came to the shul. The shul was packed. And the mayor got up, okay, what are we going to do to honor the king on his visit to Grape Town? And somebody got up and said, Mayor, I have an idea. What is special about Grape Town more than all the other towns in the kingdom? What do we have special? And the mayor says, well, that's easy. Why are we called Grape Town? Because we have very special grapes, the best in the whole land. And from our grapes, we make the best wine. The best bottles of wine are Grape Town wine. Everybody loves the wine. It's the best, it's delicious, it's so good. And the man who got up, he says, so you know what we should do? Let's build in the middle of the town a very, very big barrel of wine. A barrel that in this barrel, we're going to put wine. On the bottom of the barrel, I'm going to make a golden faucet. And the whole barrel, of course, is going to be decorated. We could put flowers on it. We could put decorations on it. We could make special things to make it look so beautiful. And, of course, on the bottom is this golden faucet that's coming out of the big barrel. We'll make a special platform to go up to the barrow with special stairs with a red carpet. And we'll have a golden goblet, like a cup, a special fancy schmancy cup with diamonds and all kinds of beautiful stuff. Or maybe silver. I don't know if they make goblets out of gold. I think they make them out of silver, like a becher. You don't see a golden becher because I think that the wine does not taste so good if it's in gold. Could be, but mostly you see silver bechers. So they're going to have either a gold or a silver becher, some kind of a fancy schmancy becher over there, whatever the wine tastes good in, with jewels on it. And the king will go up the red carpet, up the stairs, on the platform. He will take the beautiful goblet, the fancy goblet. He'll put it under the golden faucet. He'll turn it on, or somebody, maybe a servant will turn it on. The king doesn't turn on his own faucet. That's not for the king. Somebody has to serve the king. They'll fill up the goblet of wine, and the king will drink the wine. It'll be so wonderful and so beautiful, and it'll be a covet to the king. And of course, the band will play, and maybe the kids will sing, and we'll make a special party and a special suda. And we'll make speeches, of course, all these long speeches everybody has to sit and listen to. And that will be the visit of the king to Grape Town. And besides that, everybody will clean up their yards, make their plants look nice. We'll sweep the streets, this will be so clean. And everybody will dress up in their Shabbos clothes and their Yontif clothes. And the kiddies will have such shiny shoes. And everybody will dress up and we'll make a parade. And we'll line up in the streets. But of course, the end of the whole parade and the end of everything is when the king goes up to get his drink of wine from our Grape Town wine. And somebody else got up and he said, "This is an excellent idea, but there's one problem over here. Where is all the wine going to come from to fill up the big barrel? After all, wine is expensive. A lot of wine has to be to fill up the big barrel. So where is all that wine going to come from? Who is going to give so much wine or pay for so much wine? That will be very expensive." Well, everybody looked at everybody else. Not me. I mean, not me. It's too much. Somebody got up and said, "Look, you know what we could do? Every family in Grape Town will bring one big bottle of wine. Because everybody in Grape Town worked in some way with the grapes and the wine. So everybody had grapes in their backyard and they made wine. Everybody had a part in this. So everybody will bring one big bottle of wine and they will pour their bottle of wine into the big barrel. And that way, if everybody helps out and everybody brings one bottle, then the whole thing will get filled up. And everybody will help." Well, Kinalach, that sounded like a good idea. And the mayor got up and he said, "Everybody put up their hand if they agree to take part in filling up the barrel with wine for the king's visit to Grape Town." And everybody put up their hand. They said, "Yeah, it's a good idea. That's a very good idea. Everybody will give one big bottle of wine." Okay. And so, Kinalach, for the next 30 days, Grape Town was busy getting ready for the king's visit, doing all the things that we said, and making everything look so beautiful. And some people were in charge of building that big barrel with a platform and decorating it. And a lot of kiddies made decorations, and a lot of people made their own decorations, and they put them up. And it looked so nice. And now it came the day before the king's visit. And the mayor got up and made a clap on the tish and the shul. And he said, "Everybody tonight." No, not tonight. In the morning. "Everybody in the morning when you could see. And it's going to be right before the king comes. Everybody will bring their bottle of wine. They will line up by the ladder. We're going to have a big ladder going to the top of the barrel. You will climb up the ladder and you're going to pour in your bottle of wine into the barrel, and it'll be nice and fresh and nice and good. When the king comes, it'll be ready for him to take his drink. Okay? The next morning, people went home after davening, after shul, and they came into their house to get their big bottle of wine. Well, the first yid comes into his house. He says to his wife, "It's time to take my bottle of wine." Okay, here's the big bottle. He got his big bottle ready, and he goes downstairs to where his wine is in his house. He looks at his wine, and he starts to think to himself, "Huh, you know, this wine is expensive. This wine is very expensive. To fill up this big bottle, it's gonna be a lot of wine. It's a lot of money. For me to give so much wine away just for the king to take one little drink, and I'm going to have to fill up that whole barrel with wine, that's a lot of wine. Everybody's going to bring so much wine." All of a sudden, this yid got a good idea. He thought it was a good idea. You'll see how good it was pretty soon. He says, "Look, with all of that wine in that big, gigantic barrel, what's the big deal if instead of wine, I'm going to bring water? Water is very cheap.